We're back on Canuck Central here in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? I'm excited for the weekend, Sat.
You are?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Just excited?
Just excited.
Well, you guys have been playing
big game
better.
Against the Bruins. You know? Juve's playing Venezia. Should be a guaranteed win or a very frustrating morning where I pull my hair out tomorrow.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of the way of the world.
Yeah. I mean, I do love the weekends this time of year because you have hockey.
Yeah.
You have NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Soccer. If you're into NBA, there's plenty of NBA too, right? So the sports
watching.
Big Seahawks
game on Sunday night.
Big one coming up for you guys.
I'm really thinking about going to the game on Sunday.
Are you? You were just
made
Sunday?
A decision. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
We'll see what tickets look like on Sunday.
And then just like,
if I can get a sweetheart deal,
just wing it and head
should
down.
Come, should come the following Sunday with me.
I'll be not here.
Oh, so. Yeah. Right.
You're going to that match?
Against the Vikings.
Yeah, match. The
that
game.
Match. Yeah, I'm going to that match.
You're going to the football match, are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good old Joshy boy going to the football match, huh?
They have a jolly time.
Yeah. A jolly old time. Yes. Yeah, I'll be going to the dentist as well tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Try and get it in, you know, before the end of year.
Get cleaned up before the holidays, yeah.
I went a couple days ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It wasn't a great news day.
One cavity.
It's not great. It's not what you go for.
I water floss every day. I don't know what they want from me.
Just use the cavity protection toothpaste, man.
I know. I gotta make the switch.
It's tried and true.
Yeah.
It's been around forever for a reason.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, so I got that going on, and then obviously the Canucks game, and then going to watch Chelsea play 8:30 in the morning, hopefully beat Brentford on Sunday, and then watch football the rest of the day. It's lovely.
All right.
It's fantastic. Oh, quickly, corrected by one of our texters, did Sat just confuse hearsay with heresy? Yes, I did. I did. I sure did.
Quick update on the food bank Friday. The running total right now at $62,100. So we have gotten a few bids in, a few levels of support up over the last half hour. We could keep that going. We've got an hour to really make this push and keep going towards our ultimate goal of $150,000. You can donate in two ways. There is a link up at sportsnet.ca/650 to take you to the secure online portal. Also, you can donate by texting a carrot emoji to 30333. This gives you the choice of donating $5, $10, or $25. Standard message rates will apply. We do have three donor matches that will make your money go that much further. So thank you to Graham and Leah Collings, the Collings Stevens Family Foundation, and an anonymous donor. They're inspiring generosity this holiday by matching your donations one-to-one up to the first $75,000. That means your gift will have an impact of at least $6 for every dollar that you donate with the buying power of the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. So it goes that much further if you donate with us here this holiday season and specifically today on Food Bank Friday. We appreciate those that are supporting. If you can, please consider over the next hour so that we can really maximize the dollar amount we send over to the Greater Vancouver Food Bank. Without further ado, let's hit the music for Mailbag Friday. Mailbag Friday here on Canuck Central. Your questions for us. Sat puts out the question. You send in some replies, some questions. No comments, just questions. So no comments, just questions.
Just stop, man.
Sometimes there might be a comment.
Oh, yeah.
Comments.
Well, that's fair.
Comments are fine.
Yeah.
Comments
are
fine.
The look on Sat's face was like, if you say that word right now.
The cut eye. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, producer Josh, what do you got for us?
Everything Canucks. Do you think the Canucks will call up PDG anytime soon, or are they keeping him down in Abbey so he doesn't get claimed off waivers when they send him down again?
I've seen the text message inbox. Like, people have just missed me saying Phil DiGiuseppe lately. So that's why we've been getting some more questions about Phil DiGiuseppe. As far as I know, he's still hurt right now.
Yes, he's still injured. Yeah.
That's why he hasn't been called up and why he hasn't been in consideration. If he was not injured, I would imagine we would have seen him in the lineup at some point, given the amount of players that have come in and out of the Canucks lineup and up and down from the Abbotsford Canucks.
Which Canuck do you think has benefited more from PDG's absence? Max Sasson, Atu Ratu,
yep.
Danton Heinen, or Nils Höglander?
I mean, the devil in me wants to say Höglander because he
hasn't been healthy. Yeah, he
I was going to say Höglander. Yeah, I was like, that dude is like, thank you.
He's like, well, I can't get scratched as long as so-and-so's here.
Because, yeah, even if Tok wanted to scratch him, he's like, do I really want to put, you know, these other kids over him? Like, really?
That wouldn't be, it's hard to make that justification. Part of me wants to say Nils Höglander, but for the time being, recency bias, like Max Sasson doesn't get his first NHL games if somebody like Phil DiGiuseppe is available to play. So it's been good for Max Sasson, and he's performed well. He's taken the opportunity lately.
Next one comes from West Coast Tim. How quickly do you ramp up Thatcher Demko's starts? Do you think the team will go above a 50-50 split in net?
At some point, I can see that happening.
At some point, you're going to have to, like, you know, we all know, as good as Lankinen's been, the ultimate upside of Demko is best in the league kind of goaltender, right? So you're always going to be fishing for that level, and you're going to ramp him up and make him the one in this environment. But I don't think you have to rush to get there, right? Like, right now, you can give him Boston tomorrow, give him Utah on Wednesday. There's a back-to-back there, so give him the easier half of the back-to-back, given, you know, Vegas is the second half of that one. And for now, I'm okay with going 1-1 and then maybe reevaluate come the new year and really start to see how Demko develops in that situation. And then in a couple of weeks, start feeding him 2 of 3 starts, maybe 3 of 4 starts, and see how he continues to develop and just slowly ramp him up.
Yeah, at the same time, what I want to see by the time he's good is more of a 1A, 1B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think right now he should be the backup until further notice. But at some point, can he be the 1A to the 1B?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's going to be dependent on how both guys perform. And I think you owe it to the way Lankinen's played to not just yank that opportunity away from him, to at least fight Demko for the starting job.
You mean Blankinen, right?
Yes, sure.
Okay.
Yes. Pretty good, that guy.
Yeah, he's all right. He's already got a career high or tied his career high in shutouts. It's pretty good.
It's not bad. Not bad at all.
Career high of 37 games played. He's already played 21 for the Vancouver Canucks. And has been everything to them because they've only won one game with him not in the lineup so far this season.
Next one from JB. Where do you currently rank Vincent Desharnais on the Canucks defenseman depth chart?
So right now the Canucks have 9 defensemen on the roster.
Yes, 9.
That is so many defensemen.
It's a lot of defensemen.
Well, they sent Friedman down today.
Oh, yes, technically. But you know he's playing on tomorrow, right? Like, he's coming back up. It's a cap-saving move more than anything else.
Yes. I mean,
he's number 9. How is that not obvious?
So let's just look at right shot defenseman. Okay. Hronik's in the lineup. It's Hronik. But Hronik's not in the lineup right now.
So it's Myers.
So it's Myers.
Myers, Juulsen.
Uh-huh.
Friedman.
Yeah.
And then Desharnais.
Yeah. It's number 4 on the right hand. Depth chart.
And currently, with their best one out. Yeah. So number 5, usually.
Yeah, so but right now, I mean, him and Friedman could alternate. And in theory, he could also, like...
And Friedman was more physical than Desharnais, like, these last 2 games than Desharnais has been all season.
Bro, Noah Juulsen is, like, so far ahead of Desharnais right now that we're talking about Friedman or Desharnais. Right? We're not even saying, like, what about Noah Juulsen? Like, he's cleared Desharnais. Yeah. And that's more of an indictment on where Desharnais... And honestly, I'm not trying to bag on Desharnais so much because he does have value in certain ways, but he hasn't played well. It's very clear. We saw how Friedman played. Friedman, in his his second game, the first game or whatever, had decent moments. But the way Friedman played last night was better than any single game we've seen from Desharnais this season.
Yeah.
Outside of maybe one game alongside Brännström.
Man, he threw a couple of massive hits. The second one, was the beginning of the start of Besser's goal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he that delays their change.
The beginning of the start. What a phrase that was.
Beginning of the start.
It was the beginning of the start.
it was what allowed the scoring chance to happen. It created the space for Hughes to be able to wheel out and make the play up to Miller, yeah. And then next thing you know, you got to bounce. And that doesn't happen, you're right, without Friedman throwing that hit in neutral zone and stifling, you know, the zone entry.
See, tired, beginning of the end.
Beginning of the
wired,
end.
Beginning of the start.
Beginning of the initial start. Next one from Carm. Piggybacking off of that, what teams do you think would want to take Vinny Desharnais in a trade?
So,
what do you get for Vinny Desharnais in trade?
What teams do you think would be interested?
Oh,
in it?
Okay.
I mean, you can answer that question too.
Who are the biggest mark teams in the NHL?
I still feel like Desharnais, right shot defenseman, skates pretty well, can penalty kill. I still think teams around the league would say we might have interest in seeing what's here. I don't think they'd be willing to pay you anything for it. Is he now become what Andrei Kuzmenko was for the Canucks last year and a make weight in a potential deal to acquire somebody else?
Yeah.
Where you make the salaries work to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think that's probably the more realistic thing. I do think that if you get to a point where teams go through some injury troubles,
yeah,
and they need some right-handed defensemen, that's where things become a little bit interesting. Like, for instance, right, the Colorado Avalanche, their PK has been pretty bad this season.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a ton of depth outside their top four. The right-hand defenseman has been a bit of an issue. They're trying to keep cap space because they have guys coming back from LTIR, and we'll see where Landeskog is at. But I could actually see Colorado being a team where it could make some sense. The extra year is what for a team that is so conscious of every dollar they spend. That's the issue. But you have to look at a team like that has some aspirations, is a decent team, and has a pretty big need on the right side and on the PK.
Mm.
And they can live with him bringing that potentially on their third pair, or at least fighting for that spot, right?
Yeah.
And so Colorado I look at as that type of team, but I'm just not sure they're high on Desharnais, for instance, right? And I think the other teams you have to look at is, for instance, if the Islanders do move a defenseman, I think they're a team that could be interested. I think even a team like Nashville, if they end up moving some guys,
yep,
could they be interested in adding a cheap guy on their back end who can play on their PK a little bit? So I think there could be some teams interested in him after they figure some things out.
Well, Detroit, maybe too. Their penalty kill's been awful, but they've already got like inefficient money on their back end with guys like Petrie and Justin Hall, so it's like doesn't really make sense.
So what's $2 million more?
Yeah, you know, I feel like his value, because you know, if Friedman's coming out and saying that Vancouver is looking for a situation for Vincent Desharnais, it means nobody is calling you to acquire Desharnais,
yeah.
And anybody they've called so far is very lukewarm on the idea. So it's going to be one of those things where it develops as the season goes on. It potentially develops when the Canucks are calling to acquire somebody else,
yeah,
and they need to make the money work, like we saw with the Avs going out and getting Mackenzie Blackwood. They had to include Georgiev in the deal to make the money work for them, and then retain some of Georgiev to make the money enough for the deal to go through. So, like, that's, I just feel like that's where Desharnais is at this point. He's more of a make weight in a deal than anything else.
Yeah, and somebody's texting in, what about the Sabres? You know, manifest the Sabres, because they have some interesting players, of course. Again, like, I think teams like that, if they move some guys out, create some a need on their back. Even Philly, for instance, right? If they move Ristolainen.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's where you start looking at, where teams might be looking at getting somebody in for a specific role down their lineup.
Like, is Joki Haru having a good year with Buffalo? You know, could you make that kind of a deal?
If you get Joki Haru, I mean,
now obviously you'd have to include something else on top of Desharnais, but I don't know exactly what that looks like.
Next one from Mike: what depth players not named Desharnais do you think the Canucks are looking to move out?
Well, look at the again. Yeah, we've talked about this. If you're looking to open up a little bit of cap space, then the obvious name becomes Danton Heinen, who's making a little over $2 million.
Yeah, and we mentioned this earlier this week. That's the guy to watch.
Yeah.
Danton Heinen here that, we heard about the Desharnais stuff, and I mentioned how there's been a little interest in him trade-wise, and it's not an easy one to move out. On Heinen, I wouldn't be surprised if there's at least been some level of discussions. I don't know if it's gone anywhere necessarily, but I think if they can move his salary out, they would consider it.
Yeah.
Now, very seriously, right? Doesn't mean he is going to get traded, but because, again, to your point, it's 2.25, creates cap space. The fit hasn't, it's not that he's been bad, right? Because he's brought a bottom line. He has, what, 11 points on the season? He's bringing something to the team. Been good on the PK. Last few games, it has waned a bit. Generally has been solid with his positional play. But I don't think he's been forechecking and skating as fast and hard as they want him to. And I don't think he's been as consistent on that and retrieving pucks like they want. So if you paid him with the eye of him giving you surplus value and perhaps earning a spot up your lineup, and you see that that's not going to happen, what's the utility in having a guy making 2.25 playing your fourth line? Probably not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what it comes down to. And if they don't think Heinen can play up the lineup, I don't see the fit here long term. If you go beyond that, I think the obvious one becomes Hoglander.
Yeah.
You know, like I think there's
but
nobody
Hoglander
else.
Hoglander helps you cap-wise more next year and beyond than it does this year.
It doesn't help you cap-wise.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, to the point that Elliot made about a logjam of players, I would go with the list as Desharnais, Heinen, and then Hoglander.
Yeah. But I view Hoglander more as like a trade chip.
You know, I agree. But it's more about guys that could go out. If you look at the list of guys in that logjam, right? Like, I'm not sure who else you would put ahead of those guys.
I didn't realize this, but Heinen actually has a 12-team no-trade clause.
Yes.
He does. Which is quite interesting.
It is. You know, so it makes it, a slightly more complicated, depending on what type of no trade clause he has, right? Like, yeah. I mean, which teams he has on the list.
I think it's one of those things, like, in that salary range coming off the year that he had a little bit of bargaining power, knowing, you know, most teams were offering him probably in the same range of salary. And if you wanted to get him, you had to give him a little bit more leverage. And that's what ended up happening.
Next one comes from Taj. Well, would the Canucks be interested in Nazem Kadri at the trade deadline?
I can see him being the type of player the Canucks would at the very least check in on. Absolutely. The number might be too big ultimately, the $7 million, especially with his age, and he has a few more years left. But given that they were willing to go to that number with Elias Lindholm and how much they prioritize having a third line center, I think he's a player that at least would create a conversation in the front office. Would it have to be one where they would want retention to make it work? I could see that because the number, it's hard to make it fit unless you're doing something bigger elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's just a tough number to take into next season. If you can get him with retention and the number is closer to, say, $4 or $5 million, I think that changes the equation a bit.
Yeah, I like Kadri as a player. Don't love taking on that contract unless they are retaining. And at the same time, I'm still, like all the Calgary players, knowing that ownership group, like with where they're at in the standings, I'm not sure they're going to be all that interested in selling off players. And certainly not somebody that they'd have to retain on to move out. So to me, it's a bit of wishful thinking on Nazem Kadri.
Next one from Chester. What are the odds Rutherford rips into the speculators on After Hours tomorrow?
The speculators.
Hi.
So I don't think Rutherford has an issue with people talking trades. I don't think people in the front office has a big issue with fans and media talking trades. They understand that's kind of part of the business, and sometimes stuff kind of comes out. And you know, Rutherford, I think, is a guy who's not afraid of getting his opinion across if he has to.
Yep.
You know, and putting stuff out there from time to time. So I don't think they have issues with that. I think it's more about speculation or stuff on the personal details, and sometimes that people have been spreading that is not true. And ultimately some innuendo about what led to JT going away that didn't have anything to do with trades, right? Yeah. Like, I think those are the things that he didn't like. But I don't think they have any issues with, you know, people talking trades. Now, he's probably going to say they're not trading him. They want to keep him, like he's already come out and said. But I'm not sure what to expect from Rutherford, because Rutherford kind of says what he wants to say.
the last time he was on After Hours is when he spilled the beans that he didn't realize Bruce Boudreaux had an extra year on his contract. So yeah, there could be fireworks. All I'm saying is don't turn off Hockey Night in Canada after the Canucks and Bruins tomorrow. That's it.
It's gonna be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Next one from Erica, a hypothetical.
Okay.
What would your ideal lineup be, including goalies, of active NHL players under 6 feet tall from any team? So let's go like starting lineup.
Okay, so is there even a goalie that's under 6 feet in the NHL?
Dustin Wolf.
Is he?
I think
Is he 5'11"?
I could be wrong.
Dustin Wolf is that?
That was just the first short goalie that popped into my head.
But like short goalies in today's NHL, like 6'1".
Yeah, he's exactly 6 feet.
Yeah. I mean, we might have to go by default, so maybe he is. Whoever the shortest goaltender is, let's put him in
Soros.
There. Soros is also six feet?
Is he? He's 5'11".
Well, Soros, he's the guy. Gosh. There you go.
All right.
That's a good one, too.
All right,
that's
we got UC one. Soros in net. I like that.
Okay.
Garland's on the team.
Are you?
Is Garland on the team?
Okay, so Braden Point's on the team.
Yes.
Right?
Okay, let's start with our top line. Braden Point is probably our top line.
Kirill Kaprizov is 5'10".
So he's on it.
Oh, so we're going, what under 6 feet?
Under 6 feet,
under
yes.
6 feet.
I mean, I think Garland might get squeezed out.
Yeah. Okay.
Brad Marchand?
How tall is Jack Hughes? Is 5'11".
Oh yeah, Jack Hughes.
There
or Connor Bedard. But
Connor.
Jack Hughes.
Well, yeah, let's go Jack Hughes. So yeah, Hughes, Point, and Kaprizov.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fox and Hughes.
Yeah. That's a great team.
Right?
Yeah.
And then Soros.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good starting lineup.
Okay.
That's a pretty good starting lineup.
Yeah.
Pretty compelling.
Who do we have on defense?
Fox and Hughes.
Yeah, there's a lot of Hughes there. Okay. I'm liking this team.
Do you have any issues with the
team? You don't want two Hugheses on the team?
You are a third Hughes? The third Hughes is too tall.
Yeah, Luke Hughes is too big. there's nobody. I don't think we can find a better team than that.
No. Like, the only other player that kind of sprung to mind was, like, Clayton Keller, but I don't think he's good enough to beat out.
I think part of this was, like, instead of 6 foot, it should be, like, 5'10 and below.
Yeah.
Like the Cole Caulfield erasure right now, I think that's kind of the pocket of the type of player we should be looking at.
Mm.
Too bad.
Cole Caulfield. You're right. I mean, Cole Caulfield could definitely be on the list, but hard to break this lineup given who's on the top line here. Oh man.
If you did go like even 5'10 and under, like Kaprizov is still 5'10. Braden Point is still 5'10.
Yep.
It's tough.
Could have had Tyler Motte on the team. Missed opportunity. All right, what's next?
Tyler Motte. You have to go like under 5'10 to make these guys fit.
Next one, Basketball Phil. Will the Whitecaps end up in Memphis or OKC?
Neither. Probably Las Vegas. If they were to relocate. Look, I think this, like, the whole Whitecaps thing is funny because a couple of days ago I was talking with somebody and they were wondering if the Whitecaps would be long for Vancouver. And I've always, and I don't mean this as a shot to the current owners or anything like that. I mean, they brought this team into MLS. They've been with it for more than a decade now, and they've done some nice things with the team, even though they haven't had much success in the league. I've always wondered, when expansion stops, is this ownership group still committed to MLS?
And the answer is pretty clear.
This summer, Don Garber was like, we're stopping expansion for now. There's a cooling off period for expansion after San Diego joins the league and we get to 30. And this is the offseason where they decide now is the time to move on from our investment with the Vancouver Whitecaps. I mean, it's somewhat cynical, but honestly, like from an investment point of view and a financial point of view, the expansion fees are probably what has made this team profitable more than anything else over this time period. I looked at it, Sat, from when the Whitecaps joined MLS in 2011, there's only been 3 years where there hasn't been expansion in the league. Three out of their 13 plus years now in MLS. So basically every offseason you're getting a check from an expansion team that's come in. And by the way, the most recent one, San Diego, paid $500 million to join the league. So that's a pretty big check for the other 29 teams to cut. It's similar to the one that Vegas cut to NHL owners back in 2018, right? So this is not... this is very obvious how this is all played out. I wonder about not owning your stadium, how profitable the team really can be, how thin the margins are when you're not getting those expansion fees in every single year. It's just, it's a really tough business on a year-to-year basis, given where MLS salaries are going and the fact that you don't have a soccer-specific stadium that you own to really... make it profitable, make it feasible as a business owner.
So the question is anybody actually going to buy it and keep it in Vancouver long term?
Look, the list is short locally.
Yeah, I mean, and
right.
So if there's no more expansion and you have like other cities, and you brought up a city that's very interesting,
Vegas.
So Vegas obviously has infrastructure too.
Vegas is known to want an MLS team,
right? So they want an MLS team.
Yeah,
they have a stadium, numerous stadiums where they could play if they wanted to, right? I don't know, depends on who's buying it, whether they would own the stadium or not, but nonetheless, you can get plenty of deals that you want, and amenities would be better.
I mean, you could probably play at the football stadium while you build a soccer-specific stadium.
You could do that too. Yeah, absolutely, right? The only thing, it's so hot there, so you would have to have, in the summertime, a retractable roof, most likely, right? You can't be playing in... It has to be retractable, at least, or closed.
Can't play
dome.
In the desert.
No, you can't. Not like
in the summer.
50 degrees out there, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't do that on certain days. But... that, to me, from an MLS standpoint, seems a lot more appealing than keeping the team in Vancouver. What is interesting, though, is in Vancouver, the World Cup is coming to play matches here in a couple of years.
Yeah.
People keep texting in about Ryan Reynolds because we saw what he did with Wrexham, for instance. Is the most optimistic viewpoint that somehow Reynolds gets involved and the draw of the World Cup being in Vancouver will lead the MLS to making sure that they stay here? But the fact that there's no clause that requires a team to stay has me very skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, look, Reynolds brought Wrexham in here to BC Place. They had a pretty decent crowd, had pretty high ticket prices for Wrexham. We saw what he did with that team, building out the TV show and everything else. I'm sure MLS would absolutely love that. They've got some pretty big names on their owners list. I think McConaughey is part of the consortium that owns Austin FC. So, you know, they've got some really intriguing owners around the league. That could be something that happens. I don't think, look, Ryan Reynolds is an amazing businessman. I don't think he has the money to have that, to fork out that kind of cash. Could he lead a consortium? That's the best case scenario for a locally owned version of the Vancouver Whitecaps. That's the sell point too is, you know, hey, it's worth this now, but imagine what soccer looks like in North America post 2026 World Cup. But I don't know. Like that's the optimistic sell point. The pessimistic sell point is you're not going to have expansion fees coming in for a little bit here. How are you making money when you don't own the stadium, you don't own the training center? The assets you have are the players on the team.
Well,
it's just, you know,
it comes down to long-term value. Like, does a buyer look at it and say, at some point we might be able to get our own stadium? Number two,
but you're tacking on the money to build a stadium.
Yeah, no doubt.
On top of the $450 or whatever it's going to cost you to buy the team.
Yeah, but ultimately, if you want to buy a stadium and a team, it's going to cost a lot of money anyways.
Yeah.
Like, if Vancouver had a stadium, how much do you think the value of the team would be?
It would be
closer to $1 billion, right? Because the land value for stadium,
the land value
would be like
Vancouver,
a few hundred million, right? Like you're talking about at least $700-800 million, right?
Something
along those
lines.
It would be a lot because of the money you can also make from having your own building.
The Whitecaps are valued as the second cheapest team in MLS.
Yeah, because they have no assets.
Yeah.
Right? And if you had assets, it'd be a lot different. So that would have to be the upside. Somebody sees the upside that the franchise valuations will keep going up. So whatever you pay today will come back to you. And that the economics, if they look at the financials when they're trying to buy the team, show that you can still make money.
Mm-hmm.
and play at BC Place. But if you can't make money and play at BC Place, I just don't know what businessman looks at that and says, this is a smart investment, especially when you don't have your own building. To your point, expansion is kind of done for the time being. So how much more exponential growth is there in franchise valuations for your property? Yeah. And that remains to be somewhat of a question. I'm very skeptical. I hope it works out. I hope Save Our Whitecaps, it goes a lot better than Save Our Grizzlies. As a young teenager who loved the Grizzlies reach, I went to the protests for Save Our Grizzlies. I handed out Save Our Grizzlies stickers to anybody I would see. I was screaming from rooftops, keep the Grizzlies in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I had my heart ripped out of my chest when the Grizzlies left. So I'm very skeptical, but I hope it works out better than that.
Yeah, Tyler makes a good point. What have the Whitecaps done for the team, the league? They've just held on to the ticket prices, even when they Davies money went straight into their pocket. I mean, look, they tried to spend some of the Davies money. It didn't work out. You know, the Lucas Cavallinis of the world and everything else. They didn't invest enough into salaries. I think that's part of the discussion here. You know, they haven't been able to really invest in the team because, again, their margins are pretty slim. And, you know, I get it. Yeah, maybe just throw caution to the wind and say, I'm just going to do whatever I can to win an MLS Cup, similar to what Toronto did, spending all the money with Giovinco and everybody else. But, you know, not all ownership groups are like that. They've run this like an investment club, and now they're cashing in on their investment. That's their right.
We will end with this one from Rick Dollywall. Have you seen the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
So I have not watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I looked it up and it came out in 1968. I know what movie it is. I looked it up, came out in 1968. So it's like, it's a very, very old movie, obviously. And the only thing I can remember from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was like a line from a movie where somebody said Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I think it was from Rush Hour or something. I forget what movie it was, but... Or maybe it was Bad Boys or something, but I can't remember what movie it was. But somebody used the term Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and they were kind of joking about something.
Need a remake on Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I haven't seen it.
I've not seen it.
I've also not seen
it. Oh, shocking me,
yeah.
Josh.
Yeah.
I have seen it.
Oh, wow.
And I just want to say it is Dick Van Dyke's 99th birthday today.
Oh, wow.
And he was the star of that movie.
Wow.
Shame on all of you for not watching Chitty Bang Bang.
Is it any good? It's like a fantastical movie, right?
Yes, it's kind of like a fantastical movie is a perfect way of describing it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Cool.
Great.
Kind of like a really chill Bad Boys, maybe. I don't know.
It's really chill Bad Boys.
Will Smith is in it.
All right.
There's a magic school bus.
Brilliant
synopsis with like Bad Boys.
Of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Sort of like Bad Boys.
It is Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We'll come back, close out the program for the day next on Sports at 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.